Yeah, how do you want to start this show?
Told you.
Damn it, Jesse. There's the intro.
And we've got the intro.
It's time for the Rink Rats with your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. Who hates Jesse Granger? Listen to that open, because he's a jerk. He's an asshole. He's just the worst when it comes to media members and giving up on the Vegas Golden Knights.
I did not give up on that team. They gave up on themselves.
Do you believe that?
No, I don't. I think the Washington Capitals are really good. I mean, you can't do anything but give credit to the Washington Capitals. I mean, the Golden Knights were the second best team in the NHL this year, which is an amazing accomplishment. There can only be one champion, and
right,
it just wasn't them this year. The Capitals were amazing. You have to give all the credit in the world. They played their game. They forced the Golden Knights into their game. They did everything they wanted, and all their stars showed up. What more can you do?
No, I mean, it was the perfect Stanley Cup final series for the Washington Capitals, but we were both at locker room cleanout day, and one of the things that kind of stuck with me from George McPhee was part of the reason why he thinks the Vegas Golden Knights didn't find their game. And I thought it was interesting, and I didn't really tweet about it, although he did give a really great quote about, you know, just because a great story doesn't have a great ending doesn't mean it's not a great story. That was really good. But George kind of talking about only playing five games in about a 2.5 week span.
21 days.
In a 3 week span. He feels like that really took the Vegas Golden Knights out of what they were doing well. And if you look back at kind of how things kind of progressed over the Winnipeg series, where the Golden Knights were winning games in games 2 and 3, where they weren't the better team, and then they found their game later on, it was very similar to the way that they played against the Washington Capitals. They weren't great in the first couple of games, first 3-4 games, but they started to kind of get their legs moving around game 4, at the beginning of game 4, got away from them in game 4, but they played a much better game in game 5, a game that they should or could have won, and you could see it going both ways. But do you think that A, George should have even brought that to light, and B, how ridiculous is it that you've got two teams ready to go, ready to play, ready for all intents and purposes to start the Stanley Cup final, but because it doesn't fall on an arbitrary holiday, we don't put it on there?
I guess you could say that, but I don't think, let's just assume that the inordinate amount of rest that they got was a factor.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if the series starts 2 days earlier, it makes a difference. I mean, I think they're still rusty. I think, like, and I'm not saying that that's a reason, because I'm not sure I agree with that.
Right.
But if it is a factor, I don't think starting the series 2 days earlier is really that, like, big of an advantage.
But I guess the question becomes, why push the start of the Stanley Cup Finals back 6 days when you've got two teams that are ready to go, when you have been playing every other day for the last month and a half?
Yeah, because they want to do the media day, and they want to give all the national publications a few days to write the feel-good stories and get that lead up to get the anticipation for the series at an all-time high. I mean, if I'm the NHL, that's probably why they're doing it.
But do you need 6 days to do that?
Probably not, but I mean, I would assume that these people at the NHL are smart. Come on, these are smart people.
Gary Bettman runs the NHL.
Yeah, there are reasons that they're doing this. They're not just like, hey, it'll piss people off if we skip 6 days. Like, there is reasons for this. And I think it's travel. All the people there, I mean, you saw the media. I mean, mm-hmm. It was insane.
Yeah. No, it was crazy.
The amount of media.
Yep.
550 credentialed media members or something like that. And they need a lot of time to get here. They want a couple days to let those stories marinate and really get people that are fringe fans that may or may not be paying attention. Oh, man, I read a really cool story about how William Karlsson came from, like, he didn't play, and now he's a superstar. Like, you know what I mean? Like, those fans are the ones they're trying to get. And it broke records on TV, and it might have broken those records even without the six-day gap, but, I mean, they did a good job.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, you hear about these players and what they go through and how they would prefer to play every other day, and they like their rhythm, and they like the things, and then you get to the ultimate, the pinnacle of this sport, And they're not playing every other day. They're playing every other day, two games, and then they've got 2 days off when they haven't had that the entire rest of the playoffs. I just think that there's merit in it takes teams out of their rhythm. But I'm not saying that
didn't take Washington out of their rhythm.
Right. I'm not saying that it's the reason Vegas lost this series, but I can understand George's sentiments in, hey, if we're playing every other night because that's what's, quote, optimal for these players, why does it change in the Stanley Cup final? That part I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, and again, that's for travel for the media. I guarantee that's what those 2 days are for, because it's not six guys going out to L.A. to cover the Golden Knights. It's 400 media members trying to get out there.
Sure, I get it.
I don't think it was a factor at all.
Sure.
Because both teams are dealing with it. It's just like the ice, when you want to complain about the ice. And after game one, the Capitals were complaining about the ice, but the Golden Knights were on the same ice and they beat you on it. So, like, it's, and to me, the rest is the same thing. And the Golden Knights got more rest than the Capitals did because the Capitals series went longer. But if the Golden Knights would have won, then you would have turned around and said, well, man, that rest really helped them. They weren't all banged up like the Capitals were after a 7-game series with the Lightning. So it's like, I just don't think that had any effect on it at all.
I don't know. I just would have preferred they would have rolled into the next series. That's like I don't understand how you can change kind of the trajectory of how you do things. I get the media. I totally understand the travel. We had to do it. I get it. But at the same time, it's not about necessarily the media. It's about the players and them being
for
able
me,
to...
For me, it's about the media.
Well, for you, it's always about you. So, really, all this boils down to is it's Jesse's fault again, because if it wasn't for him and his pampered newspaper life...
Look, it makes it significantly easier on me to fly from here to D.C. and then back to Vegas if I've got 2 days to do it.
No, it would have been easier for you to fly back to Winnipeg with 2 days in between, but that wasn't going to be a reality of the situation. So, again, you can talk about those excuses all you want to, but at the end, they're really just excuses.
Yeah, that's my point. Excuses. That's what I don't want Golden Knights fans and GMs and coaches and players to make. The Capitals were better.
Yes, absolutely.
At everything.
I completely agree.
Nothing that the Golden Knights were better than them at.
So let's talk about that just for a quick moment. Kind of sit here, congratulate the Washington Capitals. And for no other reason than, holy crap, Ovechkin's having fun.
His body, Clay Baker just said it on the press box, and I completely agree. I think Alex Ovechkin's body is 70% Bud Light right now. At this point,
worse than that.
Like,
that dude's like 90% alcohol
Ed,
right now.
Ed Graney said, I'd like to see the Capitals win the next five cups just so I can watch Ovechkin celebrate. And I'm like, do you want him to die? There's no chance in the world that Ovechkin could survive back-to-back Stanley Cup wins, let alone five in a row. He will die.
I think that the best bet of next season is the Washington Capitals to lose their first game of the year, because there's no way this team is going to come back and be remotely good for at least the first 4 weeks of the season. Like, they are going to be on a literal Stanley Cup hangover, and I couldn't be happier, because like, it's one thing to be happy that you won the Stanley Cup. It's another thing to drink champagne out of the Stanley Cup. It is a completely new an inventive thing to do a keg stand from the Stanley Cup.
It was amazing.
Fantastic. And then he comes back up and he's so wobbly. Like you've never seen Ovechkin wobbly at any point in his career. Well, he's always been so fleet of foot, and he gets up and you're like, oh my God, this guy's going to die.
He was more wobbly when he was swimming in that fountain near Georgetown in downtown D.C., which I walked by that fountain when I was there. I parked like across the street from it when I was there. And he gets up out of the water and he like can barely stand up. I mean, he's 40 beers in and just got stood upside down. I mean, of course he's going to be dizzy.
So the Stanley Cup will be in town for the NHL Awards. It will be displayed at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. What are the chances that alongside the Stanley Cup in that display case or next to that table, it's not Philip Pritchard, it's not Mike Bolt, it's not the regular keepers of the cup, it's just Alex Ovechkin in a Hawaiian t-shirt drinking a beer saying, hey, what's up?
I think it's like 100% chance. It's not. They don't even need a table. He's not setting it down. He's just going to stand there and hold it for hours while people take pictures.
How tough is that for fans, though? Like, that's their moment to come up and take their picture with the Stanley Cup, and instead they're going to get the cup and Ovechkin.
And, on a six-day bender, Ovechkin. I would say he hasn't showered, but he doesn't need to because he spends half the time in a water fountain.
Well, he just shaved. There was just a I just saw a picture of him today. He shaved his playoff beard, and it's weird. It's very weird.
Yeah, he should have kept that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I heard this on a national podcast. It's the Biscuits podcast with Down Goes Brown and Dave mm-hmm. Lozo, right? And they said, it's so funny, the people that are complaining about Ovechkin and his celebration and how much he's enjoying the cup. Because his entire career, 13 years, the narrative is, well, he's Russian. He doesn't care about the cup. He cares about the Olympics. He doesn't care about
winning.
And you see this, and it's those same people that you can't please anybody ever, right? But Ovechkin has proven, not just by completely avoiding the boobs, which we can talk about, like, everyone on his team sees the boobs, and he's like, nope, I've got the cup, I'm good. But he avoids the boobs, and then he's just in a love affair with the Stanley Cup. And it's so funny to go back and listen to this narrative about how he didn't care.
Yeah, and I don't care what anyone says. The cup means more than anything. Oh, my God, I love my country, the gold medal. Bullcrap.
Yep.
The gold medal means nothing
compared to
the Stanley Cup. And the reason is not because people don't like their country or they want to represent the country. The reason is because when you win a gold medal, you're with a bunch of guys that you practiced like six times together.
Right.
You are together for a two-month period where you go play six games in the Olympics and you win a gold medal. It's not the same. These guys live at City National Arena, at whatever practice they're at, for months and months and months. And for a guy like Ovechkin, for decades.
Right.
Trying to win this thing, to finally win. You cannot compare it to World Championships, Olympics, Junior World Championships. Nothing compares to the Stanley Cup because of the sheer time you put into winning it.
And you're right about that, because you look at who Ovechkin passed the cup to initially and then didn't relinquish the cup and skated with this person. But it was Nicklas Backstrom, who's yep. been to Alex Ovechkin what Evgeny Malkin is to Sidney Crosby, what... You know, you can go Jari Kurri to Wayne Gretzky. He is that guy that mm-hmm. that really brings out the best in Ovi, right? And you look at Backstrom, he's been there for 11 years.
Yep.
Ovi 13. Like, these guys have been through all of it together. And it was such a nice moment to see that Ovechkin recognized and understood the gravity of the moment and went to Backstrom first, because you could make the argument that he could go to Holtby first. You could make the argument that he can go a number Kuznetsov, of different directions. Yeah. Kuznetsov, his fellow countryman. But like you said, if country and all that stuff really, really mattered, it probably would have been Kuznetsov. But it wasn't. It was Backstrom, because they've been to war together mm-hmm. more than any other guys on the team. Those two have been in the trenches together for a long, long time.
I'm sure by now everyone listening is sick of all this positive Washington Capitals talk. I guarantee that's what they're thinking right now.
Listening to this podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
That's what I mean. Yeah. This last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
What a roller coaster of emotions that night was. And like, I'm working, trying to do my job. So like, I'm obviously not like going crazy with it, but like, to see the Golden Knights season end, and like, we've gotten to know these guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't say friends, but like, I know these guys fairly well. And like, it sucked to see them coming off the bench and just looking down the ice at the Capitals celebrating.
Yeah.
And then they gave the stick salute and the crowd gave them a great cheer. And then they went off, and to go in that locker room, it was depressing.
And then
I go from that. Like, I just watched Alex Ovechkin raise the cup, which, look, that's an amazing moment for our journalism careers. Like,
sure.
that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Something I didn't think I'd ever see in person. Somebody lifting the cup, especially a future Hall of Famer.
Right.
And then I go into the locker room, and like, that sucked. Like, I felt bad for the guys. Like, I genuinely feel bad for Alex Tuck when he can barely do the interviews because he's so upset.
What about your interaction with Derek Englund?
Me and Englund are awesome. I asked Englund. Everyone was asking Englund cheery questions about the season, and
how much it meant to him.
And I asked him, what was the feeling looking down the ice watching the Capitals celebrate? And he wasn't thrilled with that question. He did give me a great answer that was probably the best quote in my story. So it was worth it.
Yep.
But then locker cleanout day a couple days later, or the next morning, I apologized to him, and he was like, you have nothing to apologize for. I was just in the moment. That was nothing wrong with that question.
It's a valid question.
But anyways, so you go from, it was an awesome moment to see Ovechkin, or it sucked to see the Golden Knights season end. Then you get to see Ovechkin raise the cup. That was a cool moment. Then you go into the locker room, and it's depressing. Then I go into the press conference, and Ovechkin comes walking in with the cup and his skates still on, and like he's like the happiest man alive. So like that was cool. It was just a and then I wrote the mushiest story I'll ever write in my life about what the team meant to the city of Vegas and everything. And it was just that was such a crazy night.
So you didn't go on the ice?
No.
Wow.
I did not go on the ice.
Dude, I'm gonna tell you that when the Vegas Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup.
Obviously, I'll be on the ice.
No, I know. But I'm saying when the Vegas Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup, knowing what I know about being on the ice with guys that just won the Stanley Cup, it's going to be phenomenal. Because like you talk about, you cultivate these relationships with these players over the course of the year or over the course of years for a couple of guys. And to see the joy in the face, right? I got out on the ice because I was in the locker room for the Golden Knights. And then I went out to Washington and interviewed Tom Wilson. I interviewed Nicklas Backstrom. I went to interview TJ Oshie. But
yeah.
TJ Oshie had tears streaming down his face, and he was just trying to explain to his kids that they just won the Stanley Cup. And I'm sitting there like, do I want to be the asshole that like goes in like, hey, TJ, I know you've done like a million of these, but can I just ask you the same three questions that you can't answer because you can't quantify this moment, right? Mm-hmm. And I didn't do it. I just kind of sat back and I watched. And as a father, right, like there's nothing that's going to tug at my heartstrings more than watching a dad try to explain to his kid like how proud he is of being, of accomplishing something, and then watching your kid be just as proud of you as his kids were. And that was a moment I think that's going to stick with me. And this is the last thing. Barry Trotz. His comments after the game were fantastic because somebody asked him, what was your favorite part of the on-ice celebration stuff? Like, what part of that was the thing that meant the most to you? And he said, lifting the cup. When you're a bad hockey player, you think that you're not going to get a chance to lift the Stanley Cup. So being able to do that was the coolest moment of my life. And I think that that's really awesome, too. So congratulations, Washington Capitals. And we talked about the depressing nature of the locker room. I did not talk to this gentleman after the game, but I did talk to him at locker cleanout day, and that's Lucas Spezza. So we're going to talk a little bit about unrestricted free agents, and we're going to start the conversation with Lucas Spezza because I think you and I can both agree Lucas Spezza is probably not coming back, because if he did, you'd have to ask yourself why.
Yeah, and obviously he was horrendous in Game 5. There's no getting around it. He wasn't good in the whole series, but this guy did provide he filled a role during the season, but this is why I think he's gone. Not because he was so bad in Game 5 or whatever. I think he's gone because there are guys that are coming in, and the defensive core of this team is jam-packed. I mean, we saw it all year. They couldn't fit everyone. They had to send Jason Garrison to Chicago, and Brad Hunt was a healthy scratch for the entire playoffs. He never stepped on the ice.
Right.
And you trade Brendan Leipsic for a guy in Philippe Holm, who I feel like we've all forgotten existed, because I kind of did for a while.
Yep.
And if George McPhee traded Leipsic for him, I mean, obviously they were trying to give Leipsic a chance, but like he clearly thinks he has a chance to play in the NHL. So Holm is coming to development camp this summer thinking, I'm making this team.
Try to, for sure.
And another kid that chose Vegas over anyone else, I mean, he could have went to a million different teams, he chose Vegas, is Zach Whitecloud.
Right.
And he 100% thinks he's going to make this team.
He has to.
And you got to think that the Golden Knights are probably going to sign somebody in free agency. I mean, there's the trade with Carlson and all that, but you think someone, maybe not a big name guy, but just a lower tier guy, they're probably going to add a defenseman in free agency, and they simply do not have enough space. So someone has to be the odd man out, and that happens to be the guy who played really bad in the final and is a UFA. His contract's up. It's Lucas Spezza. So there's almost no chance he comes back.
I mean, it's the easiest one to walk away from. I mean, it really is. And listen, Luca was good for long stretches this year because he was just able to play and he wasn't answering questions about his contract and it being too high and him not being the type of player that merits that kind of money. But the limitations you see with Lucas Pisa were so evident in the Stanley Cup final that if you're trying to or you believe that you have a window that's open right now, Lucas Pisa is not going to be a part of you winning that Stanley Cup. He just isn't.
Yeah, and like they could have won it this year, and like, but I agree, there are upgrades available, and
right.
You just gave Derek England an extension this year. You just gave John Merrill an extension this year. Those are the other two that are like, I mean, and then Brad Hunt, who has another year left. So I as much as I like Brad Hunt, I could see him getting cut during the offseason too. But the other guys, I mean, Nate Schmidt, mm-hmm. obviously staying here long term, Colin Miller, Shea Theodore, Braden McNabb. Those top four are solid. Like, they're not going anywhere.
Right.
So now it comes down to the other guys, England, Merrill, Spezza, Hunt. And two of those guys got extensions.
Sure.
One of them may get cut, and Lucas Spezza doesn't have a contract. So there's no reason to bring him back.
So are you at all surprised, given the fact that John Merrill was given an extension in season, that he didn't draw into that Game 5 lineup over Lucas Spezza?
I mean, Gallant made a lot of changes that night. Maybe he thought one more is too many. I don't know. I mean, he that was like the most he's ever shaken up the lineup.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Perron and Tatar on the same line. They've never skated together. We saw, who was it? He switched the defensive pairings up.
It was England playing with McNabb, and
yep.
I think it was,
yep.
it was Schmidt and Theodore.
Yep. So he made a lot of changes, about
yeah.
as many as you can make, just trying to find something, and it almost worked. And I just think maybe he was thinking, we've made too many changes, let's not bring Merrill in. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't know.
It's also Gerard Gallant making coaching decisions. He's not the one giving these guys extension. That's a different person.
No. I totally understand that aspect of it. I just think that when you look at Lucas Pisa and how difficult of a time he was having against Washington sorting out their defense. He had four opportunities to do it. He couldn't figure it out. Why not give John Merrill a try? I'm not saying John Merrill was the answer to winning Game 5 and maybe
yeah.
extending the series, but I'm saying Lucas Pisa showed throughout four games that he really wasn't aware of what was going on in his own zone. That's a problem when you're mm-hmm. getting beat in this series very, very badly in your own zone.
Yeah. No, he wasn't good. And like I said, this isn't a guy that, like, if he had a few years left, it's like, we have to get rid of him. It's just, it's convenient that
right.
his contract expires and he's going to go somewhere else.
Okay, so let's talk about the other UFAs, at least the notable ones.
Well, there's only four.
Right, exactly. So the other ones, at least the notable ones. Because I'm not going to spend too much time on Ryan Reeves. I know.
But people listening to this want you to.
Okay, fine. We'll talk about Ryan Reeves for
briefly.
The next. Wait, how much time have we got? Give us 2 minutes. 2 minutes to talk about Ryan Reeves.
And then shut us down.
Yeah, literally shut us down, please. Ryan Reeves, does he come back? Yes or no?
Nope.
Why?
Because he doesn't fit this team. He made some really good plays in the playoffs, and he outplayed what I thought he would. I just don't think he fits in this team. I think when they acquired him, it was solely for other purposes. I think it was just a throw-in. I don't think McPhee sees him as part of the future of this team.
I saw an article on Sinbin.Vegas written by Jason Pothier, and it was about potential players that could come in and maybe fill the roles of the UFAs that are on their way out, right? And he said something to the effect of Patrick Maroon inserted instead of Ryan Reeves. And I sat back and I thought about that. A, Maroon can skate. B, Maroon's got way better offensive upside. And C, Maroon takes really dumb penalties, but if like you're looking for a guy that's got a little bit of size and a little bit of grit, but can still score goals and can still skate, Patrick Maroon would be a better option than Ryan Reeves. So Ryan Reeves does not come back because if George McPhee does want that type of player, there are those types of players available with more offensive upside and that can play the style of the Vegas Golden Knights better than Ryan Reeves.
Nailed it.
We done? What was that? 130?
About 45 seconds.
Oh, my God.
Not
minute 15?
Not
Let's
needed.
Just move on.
Okay, so no more Ryan Reeves.
Yeah.
So let's talk about
the
notable UFAs. That's what I was trying to get at. James Neal, David Perron. If you're going based on the playoffs.
Yikes.
I don't know how you can, in good conscience, bring David Perron back.
Look, David Perron did disappear in the playoffs.
Yes,
like
he did.
He always has.
Right.
I don't know if it was different this year. I don't know if it was for the same reasons. I do know that he told us the cross check to the back of his neck in the LA series bothered him throughout the run.
Sure.
He told us that on multiple occasions he had a fever of over 103 close to game time.
He's hot-blooded.
And that's why he missed those two games with an illness.
Okay.
I don't know if that's why he was bad the rest of the time. He was not the same player that scored 66 points in the regular season, but he did still score 66 points in the regular season.
Yes. Here's my rebuttal. I talked to David Perron on Locker Room Cleanout Day, and I asked him what it was like to play with a guy like James Neal. And he said, it's really good, but it's a little frustrating because he's such a good goal scorer that he's looking for me to find him. He's looking for me to get him the puck. And there are times where I can't find him, and it gets frustrating because, and this is his words, all I'm trying to do out there is find you. I'm holding the puck so that I can look for you and find you. That's why I didn't have so many shot attempts. Here's the issue with David Perron. Playmaker? Yes. But at some point, he's got to understand shooting the puck, scoring goals is a good thing for a hockey club, and he can't defer all the time and try to find the other play. Sometimes the only play to be a playmaker, this is why Shipachev didn't work, sometimes the only play to be made...
because he's mentally fragile.
Well, he's mentally fragile. Well, we can get into that later. But the only play sometimes is a shot on goal. Not 17 feet wide, not 25 feet high, hit the net, make the goalie make a save. Sometimes that's your play. And I feel like at times, especially in the playoffs, David Perron was looking to just simply buy time until he could find a passing lane.
I agree with that. I think, and I like David Perron a lot.
So do I.
As a guy.
Like, so do I.
One of my favorite players in the locker room, if not the my favorite player to talk to. He's great. And I think his leadership in the locker room is very important and understated. More, I think he's more of a leader than Neil is. And I think what it comes down to is he's a lot cheaper.
Okay.
He had more points than James Neal in the regular season. Am I correct in that? I think.
Yeah. He had, 66? I think Neal was somewhere in the 45 range.
And Neal scored a little more. But I think they're comparable players. And their age, Perron's a year younger. And James Neal is going to get a massive contract from somebody. They're going to give him a five-year deal worth a crazy amount. And I don't think the Golden Knights are going to match it. I think James Neal, after talking to him, I think he genuinely likes Las Vegas. He genuinely likes his team. He wants to be here. But does he like Las Vegas more than $50 million? I don't.
Wait a minute.
I'm going to guess he probably doesn't either.
$50 million?
whatever, $35
million. How long of a deal do you think he's going to get?
5 years. So five years, 7 a year. So $35 million. Does he like Las Vegas more than $35 million? I don't. I don't like Las Vegas more than $35 million. And I've lived here 10
years.
Well,
I mean...
So I don't blame James Neal. Like, that's one thing that will piss me off, is if James Neal gets a crazy payday and leaves and Golden Knights fans turn on him for, like, taking the money. Like, shut up. If you had that amount of money offered to you, you would leave.
What would need to be your number to sign James Neal?
It's not a number, it's a year.
Like, okay, fine, 5 years. Would you, if you're George McPhee, would you sign James Neal for 5 years right now?
No, absolutely not.
You would.
For no amount. I mean,
for no amount.
If it's $2 a year, obviously. Like, for any reasonable amount, what James Neal is worth, for any reasonable amount, I would not sign him for 5 years. James Neal is already a little slow.
Yes.
When he's 32, 33... he's going to be really slow.
The best thing about this, too, is like there are so many cautionary tales around the NHL about what not to do with a guy on the wrong side or just approaching the wrong side of 30 who isn't exactly fleet of foot.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna point out one guy in particular, not because I think James Neal is as plodding as this person, but you look at what this guy's making a year. And he's only 2 years into a 7-year deal, and you say, what the hell were the Oilers thinking? But Milan Lucic. Like,
yeah.
James Neal will probably be fine next season. And he'll probably be good until he's probably like 33, 34 maybe.
Even if that.
And then it's just going to come crashing down. And James Neal isn't going to set up a lot of guys. He's not going to be a great playmaker. He's going to score goals. But if he can't get to the areas to score goals, he's not going to be effective.
Yeah, and I, if like everything was equal, if everything was equal and like the money was the same, I'd rather have James Neal than David Perron. The difference is I think Perron is going to take a bath is a strong term because I don't think he's going to get crushed, but I do think David Perron will play for cheaper to stay here in Vegas because we talked to him for a long time at Locker Cleanout Day, and he sounded very sincere that he wants to be here in Vegas. He even mentioned that they have had productive talks throughout the season, that they didn't come to a conclusion, but he hopes that they do soon. I truly believe that there's interest in both sides. I think Perron is being more than reasonable. I think he's played on 465 teams in the last year.
Basically.
It's obviously not that, but like he's played on, I think, seven different teams he's switched teams seven times and he just wants to settle.
So I kind of agree with you. I don't know that I have closed the door on David Perron because I think he's closer to the David Perron of the regular season than he is to the David Perron of the playoffs. Then again, I mean, whoever knows when it comes to contracts and handing things out and projecting what a player will be in the coming seasons. But I do think Perron will be back. I don't think Neal will be back.
That's
I think Perron's the only UFA that gets re-signed. And that's interesting because what's your second line next year? Is it going to be Tatar, Perron?
No.
No?
No. Alex Tuck is a top six player next year or I'll leave.
Okay, so then what's your second line? Is it Halla?
It's Halla, Perron, Halla and Tuck for sure.
Or I'm sorry, Halla, Perron, and Tuck?
It's Halla and Tuck for sure, no matter what. And then it's up to Tatar and Perron in training camp and practice and all the practices leading up to it. Whoever gels better with them, if Tatar becomes that guy that he was in Detroit, that 20 goal scorer, then it's him. And David Perron can be a dangerous third-line player that can score you some key goals but isn't counted on to score a lot. And that's a great third-line winger, David Perron.
Sure.
Or if Perron is that leader and he's great and he looks great and Tatar still isn't clicking, then now it's Perron in the second line and Tatar goes to the third.
But is Tatar a third line player? Like, is he going to be able to be the player you want him to be playing on the third line?
Better figure it out. I mean, I'm not putting Tatar on the second line just because he can't play. Like, too bad. Like, if Perron's better than you, then he deserves to be on the second line.
And do you think Halla did enough to be the second line center?
Halla did not have a good playoffs.
No.
Offensively or defensively, especially defensively. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he was like third on the team in goals. Like, Halla had a great season, and he came up with some huge clutch goals. And he's a young guy. We talk so much about Carlson and Marchessault to some extent, and Riley Smith, all these guys getting like top 6 minutes for the first time in their career.
Right.
Halla's right there with him. I mean, he didn't get much playing time in Minnesota. And that was really his first year that he's had. So, I expect Halla to take another step up next year. He should be better.
Sure. And he's not going to get slower anytime soon.
No, I mean, yes.
He's only going to get faster, exactly. Which is really what you need out of him and his game to kind of open things up for the other guys.
And I think he and Tuck, obviously Minnesota guys, they get along really well. I think that Halla Tuck next year can be really, really good. And it's just,
God, that forecheck would be crazy.
It's just, yeah, it's just a matter of who plays there. And do they bring someone in to play that second line role? Do they bring back Perron? Does Tatar finally make that step up? I mean, they've got a lot of options.
So because I know we're getting up against it because you've got some interview or something.
We got like 15
minutes. Okay, 15 minutes.
Like 13 minutes. 13 minutes and 43 seconds.
Wish we had that minute 15 back from the Ryan Reeves conversation, huh? But I'm not going to see him in the locker room, so I don't have to worry about it anymore. So there's some guys that might hit the open market July 1st that may garner some attention, maybe from the Golden Knights, it's possible. And then there's another guy that is in Ottawa, and all that's happened with him so far this offseason is it's been revealed that one of his teammates' girlfriends has been cyberbullying his wife and Erik Karlsson, which is pretty awesome.
Horrible things. Like,
I mean,
cyberbullying is the correct term, but it doesn't really explain how bad it is.
That story is mind-boggling.
And it's all allegedly, so let's get that out of the way now. All of this is alleged, and they have, Mike Hoffman and his girlfriend have said 150%. They have nothing to do with it. So
sure, yeah.
This is all like just alleged by Karlsson and his wife, but apparently Mike Hoffman's girlfriend was wishing death on their stillborn baby and saying that it was because she's a pill popper, and over 1,000 threats on social media and all this other stuff. It's crazy. What a horrible thing for a locker room. It's no wonder the Senators were trash.
Now, in just kind of throwing that out there, right? Like, obviously, this is alleged, and there's still things that need to be figured out. There were quite a few player wives on Twitter over the last couple of days talking about how they absolutely believe this to be true and the interactions that they've observed and they've seen. But even if this isn't true, or it's blown out of proportion, or whatever the case may be, how in the hell are those two guys going to be able to be in the same room, play on the same team, do the same? Like, one of the two of them is going somewhere.
Yeah, 100.
There's no way.
150%.
No, 200%.
There's no way. I mean, if you're the Senators, Mike Hoffman is whoever offers you the first trade. Goodbye. Right? I mean, because you got to try to keep Karlsson. Right?
I mean, it's Eugene Melnyk, so he's probably not going to, because it's going to cost too much money.
And I just talked about this on the press box, but if the Golden Knights are going after Erik Karlsson, which I don't think they should, but they did at the trade deadline, so it's not unreasonable to think that they will do it again in the offseason. And if they are, the price tag just dropped.
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, if you're not moving Mike Hoffman, you have to move Erik Karlsson.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, you don't want to move Mike Hoffman because you can get way more. You can get a bigger package for Erik Karlsson if you're actually trying to make your team better, which I don't necessarily think is the case in Ottawa.
So check this out. I think even if you do trade Hoffman, they still might have to trade Karlsson, and he still might be cheaper, and you might be able to get a deal on him if you're another team, because the fact that part of this story is that Karlsson made the Senators aware of it, and they basically ignored it during the season.
So
what type of grudge does he hold against that franchise? And they already thought he wasn't going to sign long-term with them, and that was part of the reason he was in trade talks at the deadline, is because they're trying to get something for him. If he already thought he wasn't going to sign, and then if you remember the last game of the season, he snuck that puck and put it in his breezers, in his hockey pants.
Yeah.
The last puck from that's obviously, in his mind, the last game he'll ever play as an Ottawa Senator. I think even if Hoffman's gone, I think the relationship between Erik Karlsson and the Ottawa Senators is soured to the point of no return, and he's got to go.
So we've seen some of the reports on what was included in the package from the Golden Knights for Erik Karlsson at the trade deadline. What do you think the return is if the Golden Knights acquire Erik Karlsson? And do they even need to do that? Because there's a guy that might be hitting free agency and John Karlsson that might be an option as well.
I don't think they're going after John Karlsson because George McPhee doesn't like to get those big name free agents. Those free agents that are signed in the first couple days of free agency are crazy contracts. And I remember last year we were at the Las Vegas Ice Center, which is a beauty of a building.
Hey now, they love you there.
Yeah, and that I was almost kicked out of. And
was that the origination of Suck It Granger?
No. Because
it should have been.
No. Yeah, the Ice Center probably was the first ones that hated me. But anyways, we were there, and it was the first day of free agency, and I remember talking to George McPhee, and he told me, probably not going to have much action today or the next few days, because he believes that teams that sign contracts with free agents in the first couple days overpay every time, all the time. There are no exceptions. John Karlsson is one of those guys. So I don't think that's happening. Even the connection, I think it'd be a great fit. He's amazing. I don't think it's happening. Erik Karlsson, more likely, because they can trade for him and then work out a deal later. It's not the same thing. It's not a bunch of teams bidding against him.
But you have to give something up.
That's the problem.
For Karlsson, Erik Karlsson, Whereas you could just sign John Carlson.
I don't think they should get either, honestly, in my opinion, because they want too much in Ottawa. And, I mean, not that they want too much. What they want is reasonable because Erik Karlsson's that good. Mm-hmm. But I think the Golden Knights have a good thing going, and they have a lot of young, good players, and they're in salary cap heaven right now. And don't screw that up with this. That's my opinion. They want Alex Tuch. They want Shea Theodore. They want a first-round pick. They want Cody Glass. I've made it very public. My opinion of Cody Glass is he's going to be an absolute stud. And I think the fact that that was the hang-up, allegedly, at the trade deadline, speaks volumes about McPhee's thoughts on Cody Glass.
Sure, but here's my question. You're three wins away from the Stanley Cup. You could argue that if you have a puck-moving defenseman that can get the puck out of his own zone, that can quarterback the power play, that can do... that can give you 27 to 30 minutes a night of consistent defense, you could argue that maybe the Golden Knights come up with three wins and they win the Stanley Cup. With Erik Karlsson, you have that guy. Even with John Carlson, you have that guy. You saw what he was able to do for Washington. Is that the most pressing need for the Golden Knights going into this offseason? Getting a guy that can give you 26, 27 minutes of very consistent high-end elite defense, or do you need a guy that maybe can be a one-man line all to himself like John Tavares?
That's another thing. I don't think they should go after him either because they're going to overpay and it's going to screw up their salary cap situation. Look, this is what I see, the temptation of we're this close, let's go all in.
Right.
But I prefer the approach of we're this close, let's continue doing what we're doing and have the chance to be good for a long, long time. Be what the Capitals were the last decade and hope a couple, because a couple bounces here and there, and the Capitals are four-time Stanley Cup champions. Mm-hmm. That's how good they've been. That's the team they built. Do that. Do what the Capitals did and just hope that every bounce doesn't go against you and you go 40 years without winning a cup. I mean, if you do what the Capitals have done the last 10 years, you're probably going to win a couple cups. I don't think going all in, throwing away this great salary cap situation that George McPhee has created by starting from scratch at the, because if you sign Tavares to a massive deal, you're already pressed against the cap. And when Colin Miller and Shea Theodore and Alex Tuch and eventually Cody Glass, Nick Suzuki, and Eric Brännström all need contracts, half of those guys are gone.
Yeah, but John Tavares, okay, but with John Tavares, you know what you're getting. So is it necessarily an overpayment if he's worth every single penny?
I don't know, because I think you're going to pay too much because other teams are going to bid against him. So there's like, this is what John Carlson's worth. I mean, Carlson, this is what Tavares is worth, whatever it is. Just pick a number.
Let's
just say, for like not even money terms, like let's say he's worth eight. Someone's going to offer him eight. Then another team's going to come and offer him 8.5. Then 9, then 9.5, then 10, then 10.5. And then all of a sudden, you're paying a player that is going to be very good and he's worth 8. You're paying him 10.5.
But John Tavares is very, very, very vocal about how much he liked coming to Vegas. He's vocal about this venue, this city, all these things. Maybe John Tavares isn't even entertaining other ideas. Maybe he's just looking at this as the destination.
Oh, if that's the case, then sign him tomorrow.
Right. But I'm saying that I had a conversation with one tuned in guy who said John Tavares, keep an eye on him because he likes Vegas.
Well, and I forgot who it was, but one of the national guys said players' agents are saying that players are calling their agents and saying, get me to Vegas.
And that's the thing. So maybe you're thinking, right, that you can only get John Tavares
for 10.
If it's not
a bidding war.
10 and a half. If it's not a bidding war, if John Tavares is like, I want to play in Vegas, let's work it out.
Here's a reasonable number. Oh, then sign him. Then I don't think that's going to happen because I, as much as Vegas is a cool spot, like guys just can't turn down $4 million a year extra because they like a place. Know what I mean? Like, that's a lot of money. And setting up your family and your kids for their future. Like, they're not going to turn that down. I just don't think. Now, if it does, if I'm wrong and it does, then sure, sign him. And if there is a team in a city that is going to do that, it's Vegas. And like we've talked about this from before they ever played a game.
Right.
This is a destination.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing city. It's cheap to live in. The weather's great. The facilities are brand new. There's no state tax. That's a little extra money. And by a little, for those guys, that's a lot of extra money that they're not paying. I mean, there's every reason. It's perfect. I mean, Vegas is perfect. And that was when we thought the team was going to suck.
Sure.
And now that the team is great and they've got this great culture, and I'm sure everyone in the NHL, it goes through the grapevine about how good the locker room is and mm-hmm. how much fun everyone is. Everybody likes playing for Turk. For Gallant. He's great. Somebody got mad at me for calling him Turk.
Oh, how dare you?
Because everyone was like, who the hell is that? We don't know Turk. Stop using inside things. I'm like, is that insider? I thought everyone knew he was Turk. But anyways.
Oh, jeez.
No, Vegas is a destination, and they can get away with paying guys a little bit less. The state tax thing helps a lot. But a guy like Tavares, who's the number one free agent, I feel like he's going to get some crazy offer. Freaking Carolina or something is going to offer him $12 million a year. And it's like, well.
See, I don't agree with that because I think that when you look at Tavares, I think he wants to win. I think he wants to go to the playoffs. And maybe if Vegas isn't what they are or isn't what they were this past season, John Tavares is like, Vegas is great. Maybe my next contract, but not this time. Now that he's seen that there's something going on here, he's in tune with what Gallant's doing. He likes the team. I think wanting to win is going to be neck and neck with all the other things that John Tavares wants out of his next contract. He's going to want term. He's going to want a nice place, all those things. So I think winning is a thing that might matter to him. And I don't think he's just going to chase dollars.
Okay.
I don't. Now, I could be wrong because he might get thrown a boatload of money from the Islanders and stay in that crappy situation, even though Lou Lamoriello's there. I still don't think that's going to do anything or bring the Islanders to any type of relevancy, at least in the next couple of years. But what I'm interested in is those three guys, what Vegas does in free agency. And then I'm really interested to see which of those three guys would be a better fit. Because I think Tavares would be a fit on this team because he's very workmanlike. He plays a 200-foot game. He's a really good, dependable guy, dependable top-line center. And then you've got Carlson, who's just an absolute beast on defense. But you bring him in, it's going to take away ice time from guys that earned it over the last season. So how much of an impact does that make on the locker room? So those are kind of the things that I'm looking at and saying, what will happen if one of those guys winds up here in Vegas? How much does it change the dynamic of what the Golden Knights do?
It can change it a lot, and that's what you have to be careful with. It's going to be, and we'll do another podcast before free agency, right? Free agency is not for July 1st, so we still got 2 weeks before that. We'll do another one before that for sure.
Yeah.
So we can break it down even further. But, yeah, I mean, the constant juggling act that McPhee has is we want to improve our team. How do you do that? With great players. Why were we good last year? We didn't have great players whose egos and ice time requirements screwed things up, right? Am I right?
Well, until you called Wild Bill a superstar.
Yeah.
It's all your fault.
But he's not getting minutes. Like Wild Bill is a superstar.
I'm kidding.
But, yeah, I know. But Wild Bill is a superstar, but he's not playing 30 minutes a game like Tavares wants
to. No, absolutely. But do you need that to win a Stanley Cup? Do you need...
I don't think so.
Maybe not a forward, but do you need a defenseman that can eat up 27, 28 minutes a night and so that you don't have to put Lucas Bees on the ice?
That's true. I mean, I think the defenseman would screw things up less. I think Tavares, as good as he is, and I think he fits, and I think you're right,
mm-hmm.
I think And then also, like, Tavares comes in here and, like, what, is the top line still the top line? Or does that now become the second line?
It would have to be the second line.
Yeah.
I mean, and then...
And I just don't know how much change you want to make to a team that was three wins away from the Stanley Cup.
No, I completely agree with that, which is why I think defense is probably where you want to add if you're going to add. Because, and when you look at Erik Karlsson in particular, how much better could Shea Theodore be if he's learning from Erik Karlsson?
He can be a lot better. I mean, and same thing with Colin Miller. Those two are guys that aspire to be Erik Karlsson, right?
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
That's Erik Karlsson's not even that old, but Shea Theodore is so young that when he was growing up, he wanted to be Erik Karlsson.
And right. Exactly.
He can learn a million things from him, and he makes his team better. I just don't know salary cap wise, and I don't okay. Does Erik Karlsson make the team better? Absolutely. Does Erik Karlsson without Alex Tuch possibly Shea Theodore, a first-round pick, Cody Glass, does that make the team better? And in 5 years, how much worse is the team when Carlson maybe isn't the same player he is, and now Tuck and Theodore are 25 and amazing wherever they are, and mm-hmm. Cody Glass, who knows what he'll be. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a huge commitment to giving up for one guy.
What if Drew Doughty just goes to free agency next offseason and the Golden Knights sign him?
Man, that'd be great.
What the hell would happen to the fan base then?
They should play the
every single game.
The on-ice projection of his quote before the game. Like,
oh, that's good. That's good. That's what I want to see. I want anarchy. I want Drew Doughty as the Vegas Golden Knight.
All for that also.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back probably next week. We're going to try to maintain a once-a-week output over the off season, because that's probably the optimal amount of time you want to hear us talking anyway. So anything, working on anything particular, anything you want to plug right now?
Buy my book.
You're an author.
I am an author. I wrote a book without knowing it. All season long, I wrote these crazy stories about this crazy team, and now we made a book about it. It's called Born to Glory, Las Vegas Suns Commemorative. It's like a big, fancy commemorative book. It's got 128 pages of all the best stories, best photos, best moments of every player on the team, everything to remember this season by. It's got a cool cover. It's a cool collector's item. It's $14. You can get it online at Triumph Books, or we got like a million stores that they're selling it at. They sell it.
Is it available at Barnes & Noble?
It is.
What?
So you can buy it at Barnes & Noble, Costco, Walmart, Kroger, CVS, 7-Eleven, or any MGM gift shop, and online. I tweeted it out. It's on my Instagram. It's on my Facebook. It's on everything. So it's $14. It's not bad. It's a cool collector's item. And it's got all the stories to remember the season by.
Can we get a copy signed by Jesse Granger?
Absolutely not. That'll just ruin it. You don't want it signed by me.
What about just a hashtag suck at Granger instead of your signature?
I'll do that.
Okay, that's perfect. I'm not working on anything, but you can find me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. You can find Jesse at JesseGranger_ on Twitter. Until next time, thanks again for listening to the podcast. Please remember, if you do like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating. Even if you just want to say, suck it, Granger, that's totally fine. Just give us some comments so we know you're listening and we know that you like what we are putting out. Thanks again, everybody.
Peace.